She was very young, remarkably young, to be writing about Joe Mercer. Anyway, Gary James. Gary, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Now, Gary, in case you haven't heard me in the first hour, has just released the authorised biography of Joe Mercer OBE, and a lovely title for a book about Joe, Football with a Smile. Now, let me ask you, why Joe Mercer?
Well, I'm a Manchester City supporter, first of all. Now, when I was born, it was the day before Francis Lee signed for City in October 67. So Joe was manager at City at the time. And my parents took me along to Main Road straight away, couldn't keep me away. And immediately, as soon as I got there, it was drummed into me that City were the team. And to be honest, at the time, I couldn't appreciate exactly what Joe Mercer and Mark Carlson had achieved at City. But there was just something special about the club. So I'd always been in love with City. And then as the years went on, I found out more and more about them. And I just wanted to do it.
Now, I'm getting on a bit now. I'm 40, so I can actually remember that terrific City side and Joe Mercer's part in it. But you're about, what, 25, 26-ish, aren't you?
Yeah, 26.
So this is pure research and tracking back, because you've got no actual recollection of him or his side, have you? Well, you've met the man, but you never saw his side play football.
Yeah, to be honest, although my parents took me when I was a baby, I know that I went to a few games when, late 60s, when I was about one or two or whatever. And yes, I can't remember anything about those games, to be honest. I do remember around the time that he marched down for City, because he became my first hero. And so I can honestly say that the last few months, really, with Joe Mercer period, I watched City and I knew something about it. But to be honest, no, I can't say that Joe Mercer's time at City was something I can remember, and there's the manager of a club or anything like that. But after that time, really, as the success sort of disappeared from City, I became more and more interested in the past of the club. And of course, you got what your father says and your older brother and things like that. And I started becoming more and more interested in the glory years, whether it was the 30s, 50s, or the Mercer period at City. And I started doing a bit of research into the time. And to be honest, it just seemed to take over and find out more and more about the man and more about the time at City, first of all. And I became totally addicted to that period.
Well, that's what struck me about the book when I read the flyleaf and saw how young you were. For people like me, when you start to wax lyrical about the late 60s, you tend to get younger people going, oh yeah, but it's different, football was different. So I was very concerned. I'm not concerned, but I was interested to know what your motivation was to write about a side that you never saw. But let me ask you, how long did it take to research and then put the book together?
It's taken, well, to be honest, since Joe's death 3 years ago. I'd always wanted to do something on Joe Mercer's time at City, first of all, but just the glory is the Mercer Allison period. But when Joe died, I'd met him a few times before he died, and when Joe died, I realised there's no point in doing a book just on his City time. It wouldn't do him justice, really. So I wanted then to make it the full story of Joe Mercer. And I knew that he was a great player with Everton, Arsenal, and that. I knew that he'd managed England and the rest of it. But I didn't know all the details. And so the last 3 years, it's been more or less constant research and then writing it and interviewing people from all over the country.
And did you have a publishing deal sorted out before you started? Did you know there was definitely going to be a market for this? Because what you end up with is a very handsome volume, but you don't commit yourself to that level of work. I wouldn't, being a lazy pig, unless I knew there was going to be an end product. Did you know?
Well, what happened was, I'd done a Pride of Manchester before this, with a company called ACL and Paula based in Leicester. Now, I'd mentioned to them that I'd wanted to do this book on Joe Mercer, and they were interested, but they weren't committed to it, and I certainly wasn't committed to going to them. And no, it was more a case of it was a labour of love. I started doing it, I was enjoying writing it, I wanted it published, and I was totally convinced that it would be, but to be truthful, I didn't, when I started, I didn't have a publisher.
Gary James, Gary, so you've set out to write a book about Joe Mercer. Now, I suppose, like a lot of people, at some stage in my life, I've thought, I should write a book about this, or I'd like to write a book about that. But when you've actually got the get up and go to do it, where do you start?
Well, the first thing I did was try to contact as many people who either played with Joe or for Joe. I knew him, even friends from his boyhood. There's a few people who are based in the Ellesmere Port area where Joe was born, and I made arrangements to interview those. So it was a case of, I'd got Noah Mercer's permission, Joe's wife, first of all, and his family have been really supportive. But I decided I'd try and contact as many people as I could.
Now, you weren't going into this blind because you've been involved in books before. So when you started out, have you got a vague game plan, some appreciation of how long a book is likely to be to make it marketable?
To be honest, I always had this idea of a Joe Mercer book, no matter what price it should sell or whether, it should be the full story of Joe's life. There's no point just covering a section of it or trying to skimp on certain areas. So I wasn't too bothered about the size of the book. Obviously, the publishers were, but I wasn't too bothered. We needed a book that was around the same sort of size that this one is. But as I started writing it, to be honest, I got carried away and it just sort of flowed and flowed.
Now, when it comes to writing a book, when did you know you had a talent for doing this type of thing?
Well, I still don't know. No, what
they can't take that away from you, mate. That's your name on that cover.
Yeah, I've enjoyed doing it. I've always had this idea that I'd like to do something like this. I really enjoy doing the Pride of Manchester, first of all. But that was a completely different type of book. That was based on certain games. It wasn't so much a story. It certainly wasn't the story of one person or one team even. Whereas with the Joe Mercer one, I was concerned that I didn't have the experience. I started writing, got advice from quite a few other people, to be fair. But once I started, I just realised that yes, I could do it, and I wanted to do it, and it just carried on from there.
Did you ever, at any stage, guys, just think, dearie me, what have I let myself in for here? Can I really do this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, the most shocking part really is you suddenly arrive, you phone someone like Mark Lawson, and he says, yeah, of course, you can interview me, whatever. You arrive on his doorstep, and you think, God, what am I going to say to him? What am I going to do? You plan it all out beforehand, but you get in there, and you just start, you do the interview, and it works, and it goes well. And you think afterwards, well, that was easy. So if I can do that, if I can interview someone like Mark Lawson, I'm sure they can do the writing part of it. And then, you get back and you'd write up what you'd spoke about or whatever, and it just seems to fit together.
That's an interesting, you just struck a chord with me, interviewing famous people, because in my line of business, obviously you get to talk to quite a lot of famous people, and one of the things about meeting your heroes or people you put on a pedestal is if they fall short of the standards which you've ascribed to them. Now, without naming names, did you come across anybody who you thought, well, we didn't come up to the mark?
No, not really. I mean, the thing about this was that I was a bit concerned that people wouldn't want to meet me. They didn't know me. And yeah, as you say, I'm only 26 now. I was about 23 when I started writing my book. So it was a young kid who's coming to interview me about Joe Mercer. So I was a bit concerned that people wouldn't want to see me, or when they'd meet me, they'd think, God, what's he doing here? He should be in the Junior Blues or something. So it got that way, that when I started meeting people, you get a bit of a shock first of all. But everyone, because of Joe, because of the subject, everyone was nice, everyone was kind, everyone said what I wanted to hear. I asked certain questions, I asked awkward questions, and there wasn't one where there was a real problem.
It's great that isn't asking awkward questions.
Yeah.
Best part of the job. No, but let me ask you did start with Joe's earliest days with his dad's football career, in actual fact, didn't you, as a scene setter?
Yeah.
How difficult was it to research the very early days? Because you're talking 60 years and more ago.
Well, yeah, Joe was born in 1914, just before the start of the First World War, just days before. His father had played for Nottingham Forest before that, and it was, to be honest, a lot of it came from people connected with clubs such as Tranmere, where Joe's father played after the war. There's quite a lot of people who wanted to help and supply information. A lot of it as well is that the Mercer family had saved quite a lot of newspaper cuttings and things like that. Even for Joe's father, going back all those years, there was cuttings, and you can tell that for the old family, football's what it's all about. Football's the life of more or less every member of that family. So with me, I had to do quite a bit of research, libraries, that sort of thing. But it was a case of going back and speaking to certain people who knew more about Joe's father's time at their clubs.
And was everybody helpful to you if you tried to approach?
there were a few people who couldn't interview for whatever reason. Some of it was just time. I mean, there's no way I could get to see so many people. But yes, everybody really was helpful. I mean, the most surprising one actually was George Graham, the Arsenal manager, because George Graham had played for Joe at Aston Villa, and obviously his manager at Arsenal, where Joe played for a lot of his time. And I wrote to him asking if he would like, if I would be able to go down and interview him. Got a phone call back. He'd love to do it. I went down there, and you've got this image of someone like George Graham, present day manager. You think, what's he going to say? What's he going to be like? I got down to the Arsenal Stadium. He was late. He'd been called away. It was the week before they played Spurs in the Cup semi final earlier this year. And George Graham had been called away. When he arrived, he comes straight up to me and says, "Hello, I'm George Graham." And I was thinking, well, of course you are. I mean, I know you. So he then took me up to his office, and we sat down. He was so nice, so kind. And, you know, it was a week before the semi final. He was so busy with other things, but he found time to talk to me, and he was really, really good. And he said a lot of nice things about Joe.
Well, that's the next question I wanted to ask you, really, because throughout the course of the book, there is not a single uncomplimentary remark about Joe Mercer. Now, did you miss a few warts out, or no, did you just not come across any?
I wanted this to be the full true story of Joe Mercer. I believe it is. Obviously, there's certain stories that we just haven't got space to put in. But I spoke to people such as Malcolm Allison. You know, there were difficult days at the end of the time at City for two of them. So I wanted the truth, the true story. And no matter who you speak to, no matter what they say, it's always good about Joe. Joe's not a saint. I mean, he more or less is by the type of person he was. But there wasn't one person who said anything bad. And virtually every person, one of the first people I spoke to was Colin Bell, and he said, virtually every person you'll speak to will say the same thing about Joe, that he's kind, that he's good, that he wouldn't hurt anyone. And it's true. That's what everyone's told me.
That's not a bad little epitaph to have, though, is it? Everybody liked me.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about his relationship with Malcolm Allison and the way he left City, because the thing that struck me about the relationship with Malcolm Allison, obviously, it was a very formidable partnership, and it worked wonders for Manchester City. It was sad when it broke up, certainly for the fans, and I know from your biography there was a certain sadness on Joe Mercer's part, but the thing that was most strikingly missing was bitterness.
Yes. I mean, one thing about Joe Mercer, no matter what happened in that partnership, Joe Mercer never blamed Mark Allison. Never publicly, never even privately. I mean, the way Joe was, he didn't say a bad word. I mean, if there was anything about that time, he'd joke about it. He'd have a laugh and a joke about the partnership. The two men, in the end, preferred not to talk about that period. I interviewed Mark Allison about it, and I wanted his side of the story. Because obviously, speaking to the Mercer family, speaking to other people, I had Joe's side. But I wanted to find out Mark Allison's part. And he admitted that there were certain things that he did that were wrong. He said that he knows that there were certain things that Joe preferred to do or whatever. But there's no bitterness between the two of them at all now. None at all.
The thing that struck me about the partnership, and I didn't know the two people, but when you looked at it as an outsider, as a fan, it looked like two pieces of a jigsaw. Allison was very cocky, very self-assured, very definite, didn't suffer fools gladly. And Joe was not the exact opposite, because you don't get to be a senior manager unless you know your onions, do you? Mm. But he was much more guarded, very avuncular, always had time for people. Is it the old thing about the two opposites attract and finally come together in the one perfect whole, you reckon?
I think at that time for City, I mean, there's something we say where, a quote from Joe saying that everything about the club at the time was right. The club had suffered, you know, crowds down to just over 8,000 mid 60s. The club had suffered, the club was at its lowest, really. There were problems throughout the club, a bit like today, but problems throughout the club. And Malcolm Allison had been sacked at Plymouth. Joe Mercer had suffered quite a lot in his last few months at Aston Villa, and then he'd had a stroke. You know, the two of them had struggled. City had struggled. They all worked together, and those first 5 years just came off, and it just worked. And Joe Mercer often said that Malcolm Allison managed to sort of put the fun back into his life for a time, and it was Malcolm Allison who got Joe back to being a really sort of live wire, whereas Malcolm Allison needed that calming influence as well. So the two of them just worked well together. It was a perfect match at the time.
Now, there's always going to be ups and downs if you're going to take the road as a football manager, but the one note of real rancour in the book was the way that City dealt with Joe Mercer's departure, with his name going off the office door, his car parking space was removed. How did you feel about that when you uncovered that?
This was the saddest part about the book for me, actually, because being a City supporter, I always think City are perfect. Well, I did until this.
Oh, so young, so innocent.
Yeah, no. Well, it's City, it's your club. You don't like to knock them, you know, you leave that to the others. And at the time, writing about that part was very difficult because it turned me against certain things about Manchester City at the time. You start to look at it and you think, well, why was that allowed to happen? Why couldn't we give Joe Mercer a position like Busby at United? Or like so many other people have had at other clubs. You know, it's not just Busby, it's same sort of things happen at other places. Looking back at it, I mean, the way the old thing broke down, we've tried to cover it as best as we can in the book. Malcolm Allison wanted to be in charge of the side. He wanted to be the manager in his own right, which is fair enough. You know, everybody would want that. He was ambitious. Of course he should have that. Joe Mercer originally, when he first came to City, because he'd been ill, because he'd struggled a bit, he thought that a couple of years would do him. That would be it. And then he'd leave it all to Malcolm. And he knew that City were in a bad state. City were in the second division.
But that festered with Malcolm, didn't it? He couldn't forget this two-year definition that Joe had put on the job.
I mean, it was what's supposed to happen is on the coach to Middlesbrough, the first ever league game in the second division. Joe had sat next to Malcolm. We talked about the future, and Joe said, 2 years. That's all that would do me. Malcolm remembered it, believed it would happen. He said in some ways he was naive at the time. You know, he'd honestly believe that would happen. As City got better, so did Joe. So they win promotion the first year. Joe was pleased. Second year, make good progress. Third year, they win the championship. So by that time, Joe's enjoying it. Malcolm's enjoying it. They're working well as a partnership. And it never really came up then about the 2 years. Not at that time. Malcolm Allison always remembered it, but it never really came up. Then as it went on, City became more and more successful. And obviously, Malcolm started to think, well, when's Joe going to stand aside? Joe was enjoying it too much. He wasn't a quitter. He was the sort of person who wanted to carry on. And to be honest, I think the directors at the time were perhaps to blame because they should have tried to make it easy for Joe to move away from the footballing side and give Malcolm the chance to manage the team in his own
way. Would he have done it though, guys? Would you think he would have been ready at that age, especially if he was feeling better? Because throughout the book, Joe's first love is football. It's not football administration, it's not really football management. He would have played at 60 if his legs would have carried him. Would he, in your estimation, have been ready to move upwards or sideways to allow Malcolm Allison more leeway?
By about 1972, which is more or less the time when he was forced out of the club, I think he would have done if he'd have been offered the right sort of role. And the way it was, he wasn't. He was offered a public relations post in the end, which I honestly don't think that Joe would have taken. He did for a time, but it was made difficult. As you said, things like his name being removed from his door, his car parking space vanished one day, that sort of thing. It hurt his pride. And because of that, he had to leave the club. But I think if things had been worked in the right way, he'd have certainly stayed.
Because there was a precedent, though, because of the player, the old one more season thing that he did. I mean, his career went on longer than a Meatloaf concert, didn't it, in the end?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, as a player, it got that way. He was 39 when he was eventually forced to give up the game. He broke his leg well, it was an accidental collision. But even then, at the age of 39, he wanted to play again, and he was determined to play again. And he tried to get fit. He really tried. But it worked out. There was not a chance of him coming back to the standard that he demanded. And that broke his heart, to be honest. Then he went into management, and he always said that like management was a poor substitute for the playing football. And then after between Aston Villa and Manchester City, he was a journalist, and then he was saying that's poor for, you know, compared to management.
He took some shaking out of a pair of football boots. The time, it's coming up bang on 8:30. You're listening to GMR Sport. I'm Jimmy Wagg. He is Gary James, who's just released the authorised biography of Joe Mercer, Football with a Smile. More from Gary in a moment, but let's catch up with Rugby League, Dave Dalton. 32, I'm talking to Gary James. Let me tell you that Wimbledon are leading Liverpool by 1-0 in the Coca-Cola fourth round replay. The scorer, Dean Holdsworth. Gary, we were talking about Joe Mercer, and we'll talk about him as a player in a moment, but just to finish off his demise at Main Road. Do you think that City made a bad fist of the legacy that he left them? Honest answer.
Yeah. After what we'd achieved in the late 60s, early 70s, there's no way the club should have gone down as it has done over the last 20 years. Things went well under Tony Book. I mean, between the Merseyrailson period, you had Johnny Hart, who unfortunately had to finish because of ill health. But then we had Nan Saunders, lasted a short while, quickly sack him. And then you bring Tony Book in. Now, we were okay under Tony Book. But to be honest, ever since the Merseyrailson period finished, we've never really had the sort of ambition that we should have had. We did for time in the 70s, but since then it's been down in our valley.
And what would be your assessment of the return of Malcolm Allerton at the end of the 70s?
Obviously it went disastrously wrong. Now, you should never really go back, I think. I was pleased when he came back, I've got to be honest. I think, looking back now, it was probably him and Tony Book were probably sacked too soon. I think they should have been allowed to carry on for just that little bit longer. I mean, obviously, we then got to, under Johnny Bond, we got to Wembley in the cup final.
But the opposite end of the rainbow strategy, though, wasn't it? Because Malcolm Allerton wanted to bring in unknown 17-year-olds and turn them into superstars. Bondy wanted to bring in 35-year-old has-beens and hope you win a cup final with them, didn't he, really?
I think, actually, Malcolm Allerton, when he came back, he knew what they'd done the first time around, and I think he thought he could just recreate it all, which, of course, you can't. You've got to look at the way the club was in the late 70s. I wish it had survived, and I wish Allerton and Booker had been given just that little bit longer. And I think since then, it's been madness.
Right, let's talk about Joe Mercer, the player. I'll tell you why. I suppose, like anybody, any child of the TV age, at least, we're very conditioned by what we see on television. And so when you tend to see players who have been designated great but are not of the television age, i.e. they played in the big baggy shorts and the big lumpy boots and the big shirts that went down to the knees, it's very easy to be a bit disparaging and say, well, it's different, they wouldn't have had that much time and space. But one of the things I loved about the book, because you brought it right up to the modern day, you got to the point when some of those old names, like the Finneys and the people, started to overlap with players you've seen, and you actually knew were good players.
Yeah.
So you must have the same prejudice when you look back on the grainy old films and the goalkeepers always seem to be diving the wrong way. How good a player was Joe Mercer when you researched it?
He was one of the best. I mean, he was voted Player of the Year in 1950. The type of player was one who would never quit. As we said from the end of his playing days, he would always fight. He'd always play good football. He was a clean player. I mean, obviously, he did tackles or whatever, but he was a clean player. And I think the impression I get is that no matter which team you play for, whether it's Everton or Arsenal, during the war years for England, Joe would always go out and give his best. He'd always go out there and try. There was a time when he was injured and he was unable to play to the standard that he wanted, but he wouldn't give in. He still carried on playing. He still wanted to be the best. And I think he was truly a great player, one of the best of the period.
Now, when you did your research, did you start to build up an appreciation of players of that generation? Because people you haven't seen live or on telly, at least.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've seen a few videos, videos of Arsenal's history, whatever, of these players. But you can't. It's not.
They're all taken from an airship. Yeah, you only see the goalie picking the ball out of the net.
It's not the real thing. It's difficult. What I try to do throughout the book is read newspapers of the period. That way, it's different to today. I mean, the match reports these days, it's just a bit about who scored the goal and more about the politics of the club or whatever. In those days, virtually every movement of the game was really sort of spelled out. And I tried to build up a picture of what the Arsenal team was like, what the Everton team was like, England team. And I think there's quite a lot of players who came out of it quite good, quite well. And there's people you hear about, like Dennis Compton or whatever. And you start reading that and you realise what sort of player he really was.
Well, Dennis Compton actually played cricket for England as well. And you wouldn't be able to get away with that because if only for the overlapping seasons these days. But I still find it hard. I know because people whose judgment I respect tell me so-and-so is a terrific player. But when you see those old pictures and the big boots and shorts, it's very difficult to see it in light of the modern game. But generally, as a player, he was very highly regarded indeed. Is that fair?
Certainly was. I mean, one of the people I interviewed, Tom Finney, I was a guest of his at a Preston game a couple of years back now. And Tom Finney was describing what Joe was like, and he was there, he really enjoyed playing with Joe, watching Joe, playing against Joe. He really, he said he was a fantastic player, really nice man. And for someone like Tom Finney, who today, I mean, obviously still respected, a great man, a great player. To hear that as well, it just proves if fellow professionals thought Joe was a fantastic player, then perhaps he really was.
Now, one of the things that struck me about the book, it's the illustrations, because you mentioned there about newspaper cuttings, and you include a number of those in the book, and some terrific pictures. How did you decide which ones to include, or was it your decision?
It was very difficult. A lot of the photographs have either come from like my own personal collection, or from the Mercer family, or from newspapers that we managed to get hold of. There were so many. I mean, to be honest, the Mercer family have kept literally everything from Joe's career, whether it's a cutting of a game or a photograph or whatever, and it was very difficult to decide what to put in there. We always try to go for good action pictures, or good pictures of Joe, or sometimes unusual pictures. I mean, obviously we've got pictures of Joe and his wife Nora. There's a picture of them getting into a car outside Main Road one day, and pictures like that we wanted to get in there. Now I got a list together of all the photographs that I wanted in there. And then between me and the publishers, we decided exactly which ones we could use, because obviously some of them we just couldn't get in. The book would have been twice as large if we had got them all in.
And when did you know the book was finished? And I don't want a blind answer because you came up to the part where he died, but when do you know that you've got all the elements in there that you want for it to be a true reflection of Joe Mercer?
It was very difficult, I must admit. What happened with this was that some of it had started to write 2 years ago now, and the early part. And then once I'd written the full book, I had to go back, review it, check it all, and there's an awful lot of things that I wanted to change. And then all of a sudden, once I'd done that, it just sort of came together. Now, through the publishers, we got a guy called Andy Ward to help edit the book, and he's written a few books before. He wrote the Manchester City story back in 84, I think it was, and we got him to look at it. Now, I've enjoyed reading a lot of his books in the past, and when he started looking at it, there's a few tweaks here and there, but he said it's more or less there, and that to me was fantastic for him to say that. I've enjoyed reading his books, so once he said that, I felt great.
I wanted to ask you that. As a writer of football biographies, are you a devoted reader? Do you devour them?
I collect an awful lot of football books. I'll buy books from any footballer, any football team. To be honest, present-day biographies are not too good, in my opinion. I mean, you get a lot of the books on modern-day players, and you can tell it's either been written by an agent or, you know, somebody else, a journalist or whatever, and it's not always the truth to that player, and it's not the type of book that you'd want to read. It's good, it's going to sell, you know. They're probably going to sell a lot more than mine will. But for this, I wanted this to be a book about Joe Mercer, written with the full cooperation of his family, his friends, and anyone else who knew him, and I wanted to make it a biography that could have been about anyone, but this one just happens to be about a footballer.
Well, let's find out a little bit about you. I've made a couple of references to it. You're still very young to be a writer, aren't you? What are you now, mid-20s?
26, yeah. Just.
And you're married?
I am. I got married last year, yes.
Children?
Not yet. My wife's pregnant, though.
So, now, with that comes an element of responsibility, I would suggest, yeah?
Yeah.
So, at the moment, you still have a day job as well, don't you?
Yes, I wish I could jack in. No, I work at the Halifax Building Society in Halifax. I would love to be a full-time writer, but it's not really possible. Not, to be honest, not on football books. You've got to be careful what you're doing and who you write about and that. I would love to sit down and write. And now, after writing a book on Joe Mercer, so this is one that I really wanted to write, I think because of the research I did into like the Arsenal days, the Everton days, and all the other periods, I think I could write about any person or any team, so long as it was one that was interesting. I don't think I could write about some of the people who, you know, some players who I'm just not interested in or anything like that.
How easy is it to reconcile a proper job with something that you love but doesn't pay the bills?
Very difficult. For instance, yesterday we did the launch in Waterstones in St Anne's Square. Now, I had to work yesterday morning. Getting down, I mean, as you can imagine, you're at work and all you're thinking about is getting back to do the book launch or come here tonight or whatever. It's very difficult. ever read. I'd love to be a full-time writer. It's not really possible. But now that I've done this one and the Pride of Manchester and that, I'm going to take a rest anyway from writing. Having said that, I'd probably take up something tomorrow if somebody offers it me.
Well, you won't, though, will you? I mean, it's the type of thing, if you have that kind of talent, you cannot ignore it. It won't let you ignore it. It'll come gnawing at your brain and saying, write a book, write a book. So what book has Gary James still got to write? Your perfect assignment. And someone said, yeah, guys, I'll have ears of you, Bob. We'd like you to write a book about a person of your choosing.
Wow. There's a lot of people I would like to write about. Obviously, a lot of the people connected with Manchester City. Malcolm Martin, what I believe there's already about to be one on Malcolm. Francis Lee, I'd like to write that, but I think we have to wait a short while yet to see what happens.
You might get killed in the rush shortly as well, mightn't you?
True, yeah. I'd be tempted by quite a lot of people, actually. I mean, even someone like George Graham at Arsenal, I've met him, and I'd like to write about him. It's slightly different because, obviously, I know he played for United, but he's never played for Manchester City or anything like that. But I now feel that I could write about more or less anyone, given the interest. As long as I'm interested in that person, I think I can do it.
What the physical process of writing, Shay James? Because they always say about 90% perspiration, 10% inspiration. Is that a fair reflection of how you work?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty frustrating at times. As I said, I got married last summer, so I had a short break from writing the journal of the book for a while, just to get me off decorating and things. So it can be difficult. I found that I like to do the research part of it more than anything, to be honest. I love going to the libraries, reading the old books, newspapers, whatever, meeting people, doing the interviews. I love that side of it, first of all. Once I've done all of that, I can't wait to get going on the actual writing. Now, you've got to mix and match. You've got to do the two together, really. You can't just do all the research and then say, now I'm going to write a book. So you've got to mix it. But then once I start writing, I usually find now the best way is to just either get a blank piece of paper and just start. Now, with this one, I originally had the idea that I would perhaps choose, say, the Manchester City period, because that was the time, that's the period that I know most about, first of all. So I thought, I'll get on with that. After starting, I realised, no, there's no point. I may as well start from the beginning of Joe's life and work out from there and then come back to certain periods. So I just sat down then and tried working through Joe's life in order with all, you know, his successes, failures, whatever.
And which was the most interesting part of his life that you came across?
Funny thing is, I mean, being a Manchester City supporter, you'd expect it to be the City period, but it wasn't. I got more involved in the period on Arsenal, which is strange. I mean, I knew very little about Arsenal from that period, from the 40s and 50s, before I started researching this book. But as soon as you start interviewing people and start reading about the period and that, it just seemed to really get inside me. And certainly Joe, as a player, he captained Arsenal, and through that period seemed to be a fantastic period of Joe's life, and it was the best period of his playing days, certainly. I mean, as captain, he guided them to league championship twice, two FA Cup finals, winning the cup in 50, and that period, more than any other, the period of Arsenal, really got me interested. I found myself more interested in Arsenal's 50th period than perhaps I was in City's.
I'll tell you what I found really interesting in the book, the war years, when you got all these really top class players basically not much a step beyond hitchhiking around Europe to play football matches 200 yards from the front line.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of stories in there where you'd go to play a game or whatever, and like there was a game in, I think it was Hampden Park in Scotland, there was a couple of the players who just couldn't make it, and they didn't know until 5 minutes before the game whether the players would arrive or not, because, you know, you've got people travelling from all over the country, you didn't know if the train would be cancelled or what. So it was like the uncertainty of the games. And then, yeah, there's Joe played a couple of games in France, really, which were only, you know, a mile or so away from the front line, or it seemed like that. And as he was playing, you could hear, you know, guns going off in the distance. It must have been a weird time, a weird atmosphere.
I'll tell you what, there's an echo of something. I don't know if you've spoken to him. You may well have in the course of your research. Nat Lofthouse.
Unfortunately, actually, no, I haven't. I mean, we have got a couple of comments from Nat Lofthouse in the book, actually.
Well, Nat is a lovely bloke, but he told me about once when he was already playing for Bolton, professional footballer. whatever. He did a morning shift down the pit, and he came out of the pit, and the team bus picked him up to go and play football. And there's a couple of examples about Joe in his early days walking to the ground, where there was the average fan and the players were a lot closer than they are today. Now, from your research of periods like that, has that coloured your view of the modern game in a way, Gary?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, in the past, the players like Joe were one of... It could have been you, it could have been your next-door neighbour, it could have been anybody. I mean, Joe, in his early years at Everton, he used to go play for Everton or train with Everton. I mean, he'd get to get back and play football on the street with the lads he grew up with. And that just wouldn't happen these days. I mean,
he wouldn't be allowed to play now,
would
you?
I mean, actually, Joe wasn't allowed. He got told off about it a few times, but he still carried on doing it. But yeah, he used to go... He used to get on the train or whatever and go to some park, and he'd be on the same train as Everton fans or Liverpool fans or whatever, and even for derby match he'd be there, Everton Liverpool fans around him, Liverpool fans giving him a bit of abuse or whatever, but he'd sit there and he'd laugh and joke with them. And you just would, I mean, you're certainly not going to get that today, are you? It just wouldn't happen.
Well, you very rarely see him now apart from fizzing past in £25,000 motor cars. Well, that's a Joe Mercer book. Just tell us the title again, who it's published by, how much it costs. You've got your plug in, you've earned your corn.
It's Football with a Smile, the authorised biography of Joe Mercer OBE. It's published by a company called ACL and Polar, who are based in Leicester, 2 Uxbridge Road, Leicester. It's £15.95, and it's now available in most shops in Manchester and around the area.
And we will be giving away a signed copy of Gary's book in the last hour of the programme. We've only got a few minutes left available to us, Gary, so let's talk about your other book, because you've been, for a lad of your tender years, you've been amazingly industrious. This book here, and I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, the Joe Mercer book, I sat down and read it in 2 sessions. I read it until I fell asleep, and then as soon as I woke up, I picked it up and read it again. It's that type of book. Now, the other one, which is The History of Manchester Derbies, is more of a dip-in, dip-out type book, where you're having an argument in the pub about who scored what and when.
That's it. Somebody said, actually, it's like a coffee table book or a toilet book. You'd take it up and you'd read, you know, a couple of games or whatever, and that's it. You know, that's the type of way you do it. You wouldn't read it from the start to the end. Pride of Manchester, really, it's me and a lad called Steve Corley, who's a United supporter, sat down, well, it must have been about five, six years ago now, and we had this idea we'd write a book on the Manchester Derby. It had never been done, couldn't understand why. So we decided that we'd start doing it. We wanted to cover every single game between the two clubs, which we have done. We've got, you know, right back to the first league meeting in 1894, and even the friendlies before that, they're all in there. But we ended up writing background to each game, and then a little bit about the game itself. And it's funny, when we first started writing it, must have been summer of 89. As you can imagine, City had only just been promoted and that, and the way it was, Manchester United were top of the world and that. And to be honest, I was thinking, oh God, we've got this book tonight, and it's all about Manchester Derby and this City, just back from the second division. And then within a few months, you know, there's a 5-1 with City beating United and that. So from then on, it just took off and enthusiasm sort of just increased. It was a very good book to write. We enjoyed doing it. The way it works, the red and the blue working together, you probably think, well, how can a City supporter work with a United supporter?
Would it work any other way, though, if you're going to do a Manchester Derby history?
You'd have to either be... You've got to be a City and a United supporter. You couldn't do it if you was impartial, because you just wouldn't know. You wouldn't know what the game's about. And you certainly couldn't do it if you was a City supporter alone or a United supporter, because you'd be biased. We actually found ourselves working the opposite way. A lot of the good things about United I wrote, a lot of the good things about City Steve wrote. So overall, I think we learned a little bit ourselves about the other club. I think I enjoyed it, so
do that. Now, can I ask you about that book? Because in a way, that was your way of testing the water. Is that your first book?
It wasn't actually, no. It was my second book. Before that was a pictorial history of Manchester City. It's called From Main Men to Better Citizens.
So how old were you wrote that? About 4?
Something like that. No, when I started that, I was 19. With that one, that was completely different. I was approached by somebody. Well, the way that all started, and the way all of it started, really, was that I collect football books, as I said before, and I was a book that I bought on Bradford Park Avenue, actually, a team, you know, who went out of the league 20-odd years ago. And I enjoyed that book, and I wrote to the people who did that book and suggested me do one on City. they said yes and said, would you like to do it? Just like that. And that's how I got involved. And to be honest...
Hang on, just stop there. Didn't they say, would you like to do it? We're talking about our beloved Manchester City here, Gary.
Well, it was actually, no, it was a guy called Keith Nelly who'd done a similar book on Man United, actually, and they wanted to do one on City, but they didn't have any contacts at Main Road or anything like that. So I said I'd be interested, but I'd never done anything like that before, and I wouldn't just do it. Then they said to me, well, Joe Mercer helps us with a book we did on Nottingham Forest, and of course you'd be able to meet him. So I thought, well, yeah, I'll do it for that. And so that was really how the Joe Mercer thing started up as well. I mean, obviously, everything that happened before, knowing Joe and that because of City. But the chance came to meet him through that book. He put the forward to that one. Then after that one was finished, we did the Pride of Manchester. And that really, Steve, the United fan, approached me around the same sort of time as I had the same idea. But of course, I didn't want to do it on my own because I'm a City supporter, and I know he didn't want to do it on his own because he's a Red.
Now, you described that book quite rightly as a coffee table book, but also, I would imagine, there's a phenomenal potential for that book as a well-thumbed paperback. Is that available in paperback?
Unfortunately not, no. I mean, that book, the publishers, it's the same publisher who did the Joe Mercer book, Casey Allen Paula. Now, they like doing what they call quality publications. They like doing hardback books. They like doing good quality books. It would be nice as a paperback version. There's still a few hardback versions left to sell yet. And I mean, the idea would be that eventually you'd want to update it. 10 years from now, 5 years from now, something, when City win something, perhaps we'd like to update it.
That really struck me about that book, the Joe Mercer book. I would want that in hardback. I want it on my shelf because a hardback book has that lovely smell about it. It is a thing of beauty. But that is an argument solver. And you can imagine that being stuck behind the bar of the local pub on a Saturday night after the Derby games. We beat you in 74, and they pull it down off the shelf and thumb through it with all the beer prints and everything.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, originally we were thinking, would we be able to, if we had to cover every Derby match, would we be able to do it in the type of book it is? We worked out that it would have to be a good book, it would have to be a large book. And they did it as a subscriber edition, first of all. So we knew that people were interested. Obviously, books are Manchester United sell quite well. Books on City sell even better, actually, because there's less of them. So we thought it'd be a good book to bring out. We wanted to do it, and we wanted it to be a good-looking book. You know, a paperback book would have been fine, but we wanted it to be the best you could have on Manchester Derby, because it's, you know, the best Derby match.
Ah, but you're not thinking about Josh. You've still got the altruism, the beauty. Gary, the clock has beaten us. It's time for us to go. Can I ask you one final question? What your... Well, fairly new wife thinks of all this.
Well, she's a City supporter herself. In fact, she used to play for City Ladies. But, she enjoys it. I mean, she's helped quite a bit, actually.
Gary James, it's been a pleasure talking about your books. Let me remind you for one last time that in the last hour of the programme, Gary has very kindly donated copies of the Joe Mercer book, Football with a Smile, and The Pride of Manchester, A History of the Manchester Derby Matches, both signed by the lad himself, and we'll be giving them away in a competition in the last hour of the programme. But for the last time, let me also ask you, since it's me and Phil Green have got to answer the phones, when you come on, and a lot of you will know the right answer, if we say that the answer is right, will you just give us your name and phone number, and then skedaddle, please, because we'd like to get as many people as possible's names into the hat and give them a chance to win these two books, because it would make absolutely brilliant Christmas presents for someone.